in Bogota. I'm Nicole Carson for Free Speech Radio News.
This is Free Speech Radio News. I'm Deepa Fernandez.
Free Speech Radio News is made possible in part by an underwriting grant from the graduate student organization at Stony Brook University. This edition of Free Speech Radio News will be rebroadcast tomorrow at 6:30 a.m. here at WUSB Stony Brook.
And this is radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, where it's 5:59, and we have an extra minute of the program Off the Wall.
Three's Company was videotaped in front of a studio audience.
Did I do it again? Did I play the wrong theme again? What's wrong with me? I swear, ever since I got back into this country, my brain has not been with the rest of me. I'm sorry. It's 6 o'clock, which is the proper time for Off the Wall to begin. Maybe this will be the proper theme. Yes, it is. And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this beautiful, beautiful Tuesday afternoon. And, you know, these chatterheads down in wherever it is they are, obviously, the weather people do not spend enough time outdoors. Because if they did, if they were outside, they would see that there is no threat at all to anything on the horizon. I know, I saw the horizon today. I looked at it. I looked at it for a good 10, maybe even 15 minutes. There is no threat there. Okay, so all this talk about hurricanes and Isabels and all kinds of portents of doom, it must be a ratings trick. That's what it must be, you know? Or maybe some way of getting people out into stores to, like, you know, buy things, buy more things. Yeah, Madison Avenue is pushing this. I say resist it. That's right. I say go right back, return whatever it is you bought, return those batteries, because when I looked, there were no batteries. So I think everyone should return them, so that there are batteries, and just refuse to take part in this little charade. I don't know what it's all about, but look at the sky, you know, blue sky, nice sunny weather. What could possibly go wrong? Isabel, yeah, you know, I really hope we get slammed by this thing. I really do. I know that's not a nice thing to say. I know it's a lot of people don't like to have their lives disrupted. They don't like to have chaos and people running around and mayhem everywhere. But you see, I like all those things, okay? So have a little consideration for me. I happen to like chaos. I like happen to like mayhem. I like having my life turned around, you know? It's something to get us through these dull, humdrum days of the early 21st century, you know? And you learn things about yourself. Back in Hurricane Gloria, 1985, and Hurricane Bob, I think that was 1991. when you lost power for like 10 days, you learned things. You learned things about the people around you. You learned all about their annoying habits and traits and things like that. And it changed you. It changed the person you were. And it changed how you felt towards other people. And I say it's a good thing. So, Isabel, come to Stony Brook. We welcome you. We're here. We're waiting. And from what I understand, and I've been watching this since last week, actually. I've been looking forward to this since more than a week ago. What I understand, if it does hit, it will hit towards the end of the week. I think North Carolina, Virginia, they're the ones thinking they're going to get hit on Thursday. No, it's going to make a right-hand turn. Mark my words. It's going to head straight for Long Island. Yeah. And right about now is the time where we start saying to ourselves, gee whiz, why do we have all the electrical power and telephone things on these little rickety sticks, you know, that fall down every time a wind above 40 miles an hour hits them and knocks out all the power? It takes forever to get it back. Why do we do that? Why do we have it that way? Why don't we bury them underground like everyone else does? Don't know. But we'll put them back up and wait another 10 years for the next time they get knocked down. Or maybe they'll get knocked down in the wintertime during one of those nor'easters. Have a little sympathy. I missed the blackout, okay? I was in Poland when the blackout hit. So I know a lot of people are fed up already, you know. They've already experienced a day and a half without power. And they don't want to go through any more of that. But look, at least this time you'll get a fantastic storm, you know? You'll see trees flying and maybe people who are stupid enough to walk outside and flooding. You'll have flooding and high tides, shipwrecks, SUV wrecks, you know, all kinds of things. Makes you proud to be an American. Anyway, so, Isabel, yeah, that's what's on everyone's mind today, I guess. Even though it's not the most important news story in the world, it's what everyone's talking about. Front page on most news sites. Residents flee Hurricane Isabel. Watch covers 330 miles of coast in Carolinas and Virginia. Although it got downgraded today. I was very upset by that. It was Category 5 yesterday. And now it's Category 2. Yeah, it skipped over two categories. It was Category 4 for a little while. I never even saw it hit Category 3. It just zipped right on down to Category 2. So hopefully it's building its strength and it's going to unleash it with wrath and fury and all that kind of thing. I'll take a tropical storm. I'll take it. I won't turn that away, but I want a hurricane. I really do. And I don't want a wimpy Category 1 80-mile-an-hour hurricane. I want, you know, something with triple digits. Is that too much to ask? All right. Let's see. In station news, someone left their phone here. I've been having trouble with my phone ever since I got back. In fact, ever since I got back last week, everything I use has been broken. But the thing that's really broken is my phone. The same phone I used overseas, worked great. But apparently what happened was the phone company changed their name officially while I was gone. And with GSM, what happens is you have a particular phone company and you can change to a different phone company. For instance, in Holland, I can pick between five different companies because I'm roaming over there. Here, you basically stick to your home company. Although sometimes you can switch to another company, which in this case I think would be AT&T. The company used to be called VoiceStream, and now it's called T-Mobile, which is actually a German company, but that doesn't really enter into it. The thing is, the company name changed on the phone, so the phone no longer says VoiceStream, the phone's supposed to say T-Mobile. But the signal got sent out when I was away, so when my phone came back, it was receiving a name of a phone company it didn't recognize. And so now my phone thinks it's roaming. And I can't get it to believe that it's not. And I called T-Mobile and I asked them, hey, how do I fix this? And they said, well, you have to get a new phone. You have to get a new phone because they changed the company name. That, my friends, is bad customer attitude. Or attitude towards customers. Get a new phone because they changed their name. This phone is great. This phone works everywhere I take it. I'm not going to buy a new phone just because they changed their... I might buy a new phone for other reasons, but not for that reason. Anyway, so somebody left their phone here, and it's also a T-Mobile phone. So what I'm going to do is call my number. That way I'll find out who this phone belongs to. Actually, I won't find that out, but I'll know the phone number then. And, okay. And let's see, how do I place the call? Yeah, I'm hitting that button. All right, now it's calling me. My phone should ring in a second. Then I'll get their phone number. I don't really know what I'm going to do with their phone number. I guess I could call T-Mobile and ask, who does this belong to? Okay, there we are. That's the phone number, huh? All right. All right, hang up. Hang up. Go away. Thank you. Okay, I'm not going to read the number over the air. Don't worry. But I have your number, whoever it is that left the phone here at the radio station. And if you're not careful, I'll take your SIM chip, too, and make it work in my phone, because mine doesn't seem to work anymore. So if this phone is still here next week, I might just very well do that. Okay, enough about my problems, of which I could fill several hours. What's going on around here? Hey, big news. Yeah, you notice these things when you're driving around after not being here for 6 weeks, but, you know, driving around on Route 347, the big divided highway out here, they're building a new building. Yeah, they're building a new building right near where they tore down a building a couple of months ago. They tore down a Blockbuster Video. I was for it. I was all for it. But somebody let them know, and they took all the stuff out before they did it. But, yeah, they demolished that building. Now they're building a new building next to it. It's a KFC. That's right. They're building a KFC. At last. You don't have to travel to Centenary to get salmonella. You can do it right in the Port Jefferson area. No, all kidding aside. All kidding aside. There is no firm evidence that KFC is responsible for that kind of thing. A fine company with a large presence in Poland for some reason. Whenever I was traveling around in Warsaw, I would see a KFC. They had McDonald's. They had Burger King. But they were kind of in the background. They were subdued. Yeah, the ones that were out there, the ones that were predominant in the front, they were KFC. They were dominant. They were the ones. I just love studying foreign culture. You know, all the changes, all the nuances that are slightly different. KFC. But yeah, you know, I gotta say, and nothing precludes me from speaking critically of a company like this. Yeah, their product is something called boxed chickens. It's not what they sell, it's what they raise. they might sell them in boxes too, but they raise them in boxes. You know, these little cages. And it's awful. And it doesn't make for a very good product in the end either. Just ask anybody who's an expert in farming. I saw happy chickens when I was traveling on trains. You pass through farmland. You pass through all kinds of wilderness, too. But lots of farmland. Everyone seems to be a farmer in certain areas of the world. And you would just see lots of goats, lots of cows, lots of chickens, and, you know, not with any fences around them, just kind of wide open. They could go wherever they wanted to go. They tend to stick close to home, or maybe they have some kind of identifying tag or something like that, but you just catch glimpses of them as you're passing by, and you see a different way of raising livestock than what you get around here. And I'm not saying everybody around here raises them this way. I'm sure there are some people who believe in free range and that kind of thing. But it was just really cool to see that, you know. It was cool to see wide open expanse, even though it's right next to the train tracks. I'm not quite sure how many chickens, goats, and cows get mashed every day. Maybe they just know better. Maybe they're just smarter. It was cool, you know, seeing a chicken running across a field for no particular reason. That's what they do. If you leave them out there in a field, they will just run all over the place. You know, if you stick them in a box, yeah, they're not going to move much. But if you put them in a field, they're going to have the time of their lives. At least that's what I think they were doing. I didn't see anything chasing them. They just seemed to be running for no particular reason at all. And what's the deal with cats? Cats and chickens. Now, it was always my understanding that cats went after any kind of bird creature, with maybe the exception of ostriches, but I saw cats just lying next to the chickens that were running around, you know. Of course, they were almost as big as them, but I don't know. Maybe the rules are different over there. So, yeah, chickens, cats, KFCs, all that kind of thing. And driving around in the area, noticing all the differences. Getting used to SUV culture again. And, boy, you really do notice it. You really do notice it as soon as you get back. You notice how aggressively certain people drive, and those certain people tend to be behind mammoth vehicles. And it's just really kind of annoying. It just really is, you know, seeing people, and, you know, they're nice people normally, I think. I just think when you get behind the wheel of these monster trucks that you turn into a different person. And you start tailgating, you start, you know, going out into intersections well before you have any right to. And it's just not pleasant for those of us that aren't driving those things, which I guess is why more people are driving those things, so that they could be equal. It's kind of like warfare. But for God's sake, people, I mean, do you really need these huge vehicles to go to 7-Eleven? Go to any 7-Eleven right now. Tell me if you can find one that doesn't have at least one SUV or huge vehicle parked in it right now, trying to get out, trying to turn around, because they can't fit. It's pathetic. It's really pathetic. I mean, yeah, if you have a family of 10, maybe, well, that's not the best idea either. Or if you live in, you know, North Dakota or something like that, fine. But the South Shore of Long Island, I don't think so. You don't need it. It's just silly. And you know, I'm happy. I'm beside myself with joy to see the gas prices going above $2 a gallon. Because if these people driving these things, probably listening to me right now and swerving all over the place, if they can complain about gas, I'm happy. Because they're wasting it. They're wasting that resource like you would not believe. Here I am, driving around in an economy car, trying not to get squished by these monsters, and getting three times the mileage that these people get. I don't know, it just somehow makes me feel good. What makes me feel both good and bad, when you're in Europe, you see all kinds of vehicles. All kinds of vehicles. Yeah, you see SUVs, too, occasionally. You know, I did see an SUV in St. Petersburg, Russia. It had just gotten into a car crash. I'm not kidding. The only car crash I saw on my whole trip, and it involved an SUV. One of, like, three I saw in Russia. And they have, I don't know if it was the SUV's fault, to be honest, but they have a different traffic system. The traffic system there is pretty much, use your wits, you know? You don't have to have every little movement regulated. Here, you want to make a left turn, well, you got to wait for that little left arrow to turn green. Doesn't matter if there's not a car in 10 miles. Now, you got to wait for that red arrow to turn to a green arrow. Then you can make your left turn. And don't forget to stop at the stop sign right afterwards. It's for your safety. Well, in other countries, what they do is sometimes they don't even have lights at intersections. Sometimes it's just these people stop, these people go. If those people aren't there, then you go. And at night, what happens to a lot of traffic lights is they turn into flashing orange lights. Now, we have flashing orange lights here, but they work a little bit differently. It happens when lights break. Sometimes it happens at night. But you get a flashing orange light on the main street and a flashing red light on the side street, right? Everybody understands this. Well, over there, it's a little different. You get a flashing yellow light in both directions. That's right. So again, you have to use your wits to decide who has right of way. And for the most part, that works. Didn't work this time, though, the SUV. Just smash into another car. Nobody was really hurt, but boy, I saw it happen. I was walking a few blocks away, and I just saw it happen. Pretty exciting there. St. Petersburg, Russia. Wouldn't expect that. Of course, here you expect that kind of thing. It happens all the time, even with the green directional arrows. And the first sign of any trouble, first snow flurry, first rainstorm, first hurricane, you'll see SUVs on their sides flipped over, that kind of thing. Because people don't know how to drive them. They're very powerful, you know. They do unpredictable things sometimes. Anyway, if you go to this website, www.smart.com, as in the opposite of SUV drivers, smart.com, okay, you'll see this really cool little car. I saw a lot of overseas. You see it in the streets in Amsterdam and Germany, all over the place. This kind of looks like a car that's already been hit by an SUV and had the entire back removed because the back was never there to start with. It's a two-person car, and it's so small. Picture this. In New York City, you could park it head in, and it wouldn't stick out any more than if you parked it sideways. I haven't tested that, but I think that's true, or it's pretty close if it's not true. And I'd like very much to do that. I'd like very much to drive around New York City in one of these things, have everybody point. Some people will laugh. Okay, fine, go ahead. But I'll be getting 57 miles to the gallon on this. Yeah, it looks pretty nifty. But guess what? It's not legal in this country. That's right, it's not legal here to have this car. Now, how is it a car that's legal everywhere else in the world, most places anyway, is not legal here? It's passed the safety tests. It obviously is roadworthy. But meanwhile, you have tanks, you have all kinds of armored personnel carrier that housewives are driving. That's okay. That's not a big deal. The fact that you can go out into an intersection and not be able to see if cars are coming because an SUV is parked, blocking the view, that's okay. That's not a traffic safety. No, we have to be able to fit 20 people into a vehicle and get 10 miles to the gallon. That's our American right there. But a small, economical, two-person car, no, that's not safe. That's not safe. Well, it's probably not safe because of all the tanks driving around. That's true. But I've made it my mission. I've made it one of my missions, anyway. I have several missions. This is one of them. To get one of these cars into this country somehow. Now, they sell them in Mexico. Yeah, they sell them in Mexico. Can you believe that? Legal in Mexico, but not legal here. They don't sell them in Canada. I don't know why. Maybe some of our Canadian listeners can help out in that department, because you tend to do more progressive things a little faster than we do. But I intend to get one of these things. And I intend to drive it all over the place. I just don't know how yet. Smart.com. That's and this is not an ad for them, by the way. They're made by the people, believe it or not, who make swatches. And well, they're half involved. And I think I don't know, Mercedes-Benz or not Mercedes, some other company is involved also. So you know, they're regular car people, except for the swatch part. I don't quite understand that. And I'll keep people updated as to how that's going. One of my other campaigns is to get the BBC into the United States, and apparently, that's not too far away. Well, actually, I found a couple of articles about this, saying that BBC World is about to actually be launched in the United States. BBC World being the 24-hour news station that comes from England, which has quite a different perspective on world events, and actually quite a lot more coverage of world events than you might see here on any of the channels. And I saw a story that basically said that they were about to launch in the United States. Let's see what the quote here is. After BBC America was launched, BBC wanted to form agreements with cable operators to also carry BBC World, its international news network, which now can be accessed by buying a satellite dish and decoder, which costs around $4,000. Well, that's not entirely true. Maybe you can get it that way as well. But you can also get it much cheaper by getting a satellite dish from Canada, which is what I did, and simply paying a monthly fee. Don't pirate the signal. Pay the monthly fee. You just have to get an address in Canada, and it's very easy. It's worked great for me for a couple of years now. And you can see it that way. And you can see all kinds of other things as well. Anyway, a spokesman for the BBC, Josh Weinberg, said within 2 or 3 years' time, we would be in a position to introduce BBC World. I don't know what the delay is. Just introduce the damn thing already. You know, I introduce it into my house. It works great. You know, it's on all the time. I learn a lot about the world. I see all kinds of fascinating things. And there's no reason why everybody shouldn't have that opportunity. So just introduce the damn thing already. Washington already is one of the BBC's largest bureaus, by the way, but you can't see it in this country unless you wake up at 6 in the morning and turn on Channel 21 or something, or other various times. And you also don't see a lot of good programs that are never aired in this country. like Hard Talk, which is one of my favorites, where basically, imagine this, you just take somebody who's in the news, whether it be a politician, an entertainer, anybody, and you have this guy named Tim Sebastian who knows everything, okay? This guy just knows every fact, and he will grill you without any kind of pause or break of any sort for a half hour, no commercials, just constant berating and asking questions, hard questions, over and over again. And, you know, people in the British government, people in the American government, nobody is immune. And if you survive that, at least you know you can stand up for what you believe in. That's a great thing, seeing that. You know, people don't ask hard questions in this country. Even on Meet the Press or Face the Nation. No, they don't ask hard questions. They're afraid to. So it's good to see someone who's not afraid to, but you can't see that in this country unless you do one of these things. The BBC thinks there's a programming void in the United States for this type of intensively international news. Though CNN in the United States broadcasts international news stories, CNN International, which is a division devoted solely to international programming, runs only in the early morning hours and on weekends in the United States. And that's what you see over in Europe. People in Europe say, you know, CNN isn't so bad. And I say to them, yeah, it's not so bad if you're over here. But when you come to the United States, it's a different channel. It's not the same. It's a lot stupider, you know? They talk about, you know, the Lacey Peterson stories over and over and over again, and they don't stop. That's all that matters, you know? Sports, weather, more sports, news headlines, and stock market. That's it. Anyway, according to the spokesman, I think American audiences watching us would be surprised at the breadth of our coverage in a way that makes them sit up and take notice. Well, I sat up, I took notice a few years ago. But here's the thing I didn't know. A CNN spokesman said the BBC will find the American market as difficult to crack as it was in 1992 when BBC World was first introduced in America but failed to get enough cable operators to launch the network in major markets. I never knew that. Of course, if they don't launch it in your market, you're not going to know about it. So it's kind of weird to call it a failure when people didn't get a chance to see it. I'm not quite sure how they tried to do this in the first place, but news to me, when I've been looking into this for a number of months, that it was already launched and failed. Competition is always good for journalism, said Steve Howarth, spokesman for CNN News, but I think the BBC will find this to be a very tough marketplace. BBC spokesman Weinberg said BBC World's unsuccessful first foray into the American cable market was more of a matter of timing in entering the market than a retreat. All right, whatever. But anyway, the plans are to launch a 24-hour BBC cable news channel in the United States. And this is from a story dated August of 2003. The other was from 1998. So, BBC Worldwide is aggressively making inroads in the United States, hoping to capitalize on its increasing profile. 5 years ago, a dozen public television stations in the United States carried BBC's World News program. Now it's on more than 225 stations nationwide. Of course, that is only a half hour a day, not 24 hours a day. In the days leading up to the Iraqi war, more than a million U.S. homes tuned into the nightly BBC newscasts. In May, after major combat was declared over, viewership averaged nearly 900,000 homes, a more than 20% increase from the previous year. An executive said their recent controversy around the BBC's reporting about the British government's use of intelligence to make the case for war in Iraq and the subsequent suicide of one of the network's key government sources has not dampened expansion plans. If anything, that would make people more interested, I think, in what this BBC is all about. BBC Worldwide this month reported a record year, with sales topping $1 billion, profits of more than $50 million. Sales in the United States exceeded $160 million last year. So it's quite possible that that they'll launch this thing soon, and you'll actually be able to see what the rest of the world sees. And the rest of the world does see this. I think we're the only industrialized country that doesn't have this particular programming source, which is a valuable one. All right, moving to other news. Let's see here. Who's been saying what? All kinds of people have been saying things. Oh, yeah, this guy. Johnny Depp. Did you hear what he said? Johnny Depp likened the United States to a dumb puppy that has big teeth, ridiculing Washington's confrontation with France, where he lives, over the war in Iraq. The Pirates of the Caribbean star, who spends much of his time in the south of France with his companion, the singer and actress Vanessa Paradis, and their two children, told the German magazine Stern he couldn't see himself paying more than short visits to his Los Angeles residence in the present political climate. Depp recalled that French fries were renamed Freedom Fries in the House cafeteria on Capitol Hill at the height of U.S. anger over France's refusal to back the administration of President George W. Bush over the war in Iraq. "Nothing made me happier than when I read that. Grown men and grown women in positions of power in the United States government," Depp said. "I was ecstatic because they revealed themselves as idiots." Depp said he wanted his two children, ages 1 and 4, to experience the United States like it's kind of a toy, a broken toy maybe, investigate a little bit, check it out, get this feeling, and then get out. Well, this guy, I cannot believe someone would say something like this. I'm astounded. I'm flabbergasted. Comparing the United States to a dumb puppy that has big teeth. Where does he come off saying something like that? I've had puppies, all right? I've had several puppies. They're not dumb. They're not stupid. They're not like the United States. How dare he insult the integrity of man's best friend? Is Johnny Depp never going to get a dog for those two kids? There's lots of dogs in France. I've seen them. Yeah, is he what? Is he just going to be a cat person? Going to stay away from dogs the rest of his life because they're dumb, they're stupid, they invade other places? No, this kind of a thing just does not stand in my book, all right? And I think an apology is in order. Comparing the United States to a puppy. No. When people say stupid things like that, you just have to call them on it. You just do. All right. Stupid things. Let's stick with stupid things for a while because that'll keep us going. Tommy Chong. Yeah, Tommy, you remember Tommy Chong? Cheech and Chong? You remember Cheech and Chong. Come on. Oh, you remember. Those of you too young, go on the internet, because, well, this is the only way you find things fast, all right? I could say, yeah, go out to the retail store and look around. You probably won't find it because it's probably not there anyway, but keep looking, and maybe in a few days you'll find something for $22 that you can buy, take it home, play it in your CD player, and yeah, that's what Cheech and Chong are. Or you can hop on the internet right now and find out. And then maybe you'll be interested and buy more. Who knows? But anyway, yeah, Tommy Chong is half of the Cheech and Chong comedy duo, I guess is the best way to describe them. And they were big back in the 70s. He played, I guess, as this story describes it, half of the dope-smoking duo in the Cheech and Chong movies. You've seen the movies, Up in Smoke. Go download that, okay? See what I'm talking about. Anyway, he asked for leniency from a judge last Thursday, but he was sentenced to 9 months in prison for conspiring to sell drug paraphernalia. Oh, my God. This guy's 65 years old, by the way. That's pretty shocking in itself. He apologized to the court and his family, saying he got carried away with his movie character. Oh, please! What are you apologizing for? This guy sold bongs on the internet. He wasn't selling drugs. He was selling bongs. It's a big difference. We're going to put people in prison now for selling anything that can be used for drugs? That's insane. That's insane. For one thing, the whole drug-forbidding culture is insane in and of itself. But now it's spreading beyond that. It's not just banning the certain substances. It's banning anything that could be used to use the certain substances. Maybe talking about it will be banned soon, because that might give people ideas to use the substances. Listen to this. He admitted once having a drug problem with marijuana, but said he beat it by redirecting his energy to salsa dancing. This poor guy is trying to win the judge over by saying things like, it's a Latin American dance, that's awesome. This poor 65-year-old guy trying to, like, talk to a judge about salsa dancing, thinking that's going to reduce his sentence. There's no reason for him to have to belittle himself like that. U.S. District Judge Arthur J. Schwab imposed the 9-month sentence and also a $20,000 fine. Chong said he has been working with youth groups, teaching filmmaking and speaking against drug use. When they saw I was not the character that I played in the movies, they were surprised. Some were disappointed. Now listen to this. Assistant U.S. Attorney Mary Houghton said, Chong grew wealthy glamorizing drug use and trivializing law enforcement in the films of the late 70s and early 80s. This is why he got sentenced, because of what he portrayed in films. He grew wealthy glamorizing drug use and trivializing law enforcement. How dare he? Forget about the bong, just throw him in jail to start with. Chong admitted that his company, which operated as Chong Glass and employed 25 glass blowers, sold some 7,500 bongs and pipes until February 14th, when federal drug agents raided his California home and business. Authorities also seized about a pound of marijuana. Pound of marijuana, okay, fine. Chong's attorney said the actor already has been punished and that he should not be sent to prison. The case cost him a recurring role in the Fox sitcom That 70s Show. What better character could you have on That 70s Show, for God's sake? Also cost him a planned reunion movie with Cheech Marin, who he co-starred with. And along with the $20,000, he thought he was getting off easy? Okay, along with the $20,000 fine, he also has to forfeit more than $103,000. And he'll be on probation for a year after his release. And the business, even though it's defunct, was placed on probation. Business placed on probation, that's a good one. For 3 years, and its internet domain name must be relinquished to federal authorities, along with any remaining paraphernalia. Good God. Anyone know what the name... I looked for Chong Glass, and that came up empty. So if anybody knows what the... address was, I'd like to know. This is incredible to me that somebody could be sent to prison for selling bongs on the internet. I mean, I've seen some pretty amazing bongs in my life. You know, I've admired them. Hey, I've used them. I have no problem saying that. And I think people should use them. People should experiment with these things. People should learn. They shouldn't listen to simpleton idiots that tell them things that simply are not true. I've seen more people completely messed up through legal drugs than through so-called illegal drugs. And this kind of thing is just... What does it do to people? To have somebody apologizing for doing something that there's nothing wrong with. And most of the world sees this. Most of the world realizes that, you know, marijuana can be bad if you smoke it every single day. Yes, I've seen the effects it has on some people who do that. And you're all the more likely to do something like that if it's forbidden. If it's the forbidden substance. Well, that's what makes people drawn to it all the more. That's what makes people want to drink all the more when you push the drinking age up to 21. Overseas, I've seen more responsible drinkers at the age of 15 than I've seen at the age of 30 over here. Because it's not one of these forbidden things that they hold on the end of a stick. And you feel like you're doing something rebellious, so you do it more. There's nothing rebellious about it. It's just, stupidity to forbid it in the first place. Here's something else stupid that really got me upset. You heard about this whole ecstasy thing? Get this. A researcher a year ago published startling research showing that the drug commonly known as ecstasy can cause Parkinson's-like brain damage. You might have heard about that. Well, he's retracted his study. Yes, George Ricart, the Johns Hopkins Medical School researcher who performed the research, said his lab did not administer ecstasy, or MDMA, but methamphetamine instead to the primates in the study. What's amazing to me is that of the people I know who have used drugs or do use drugs, nearly all of them understand this. Nearly all of them would not have made that mistake. You know, they know the difference. The September 27, 2002 study warned that even one typical recreational dose of MDMA could cause severe brain damage. Scientists around the country applauded the study and warned young people not to experiment with ecstasy. And now, Ricard says it was a case of mixed up bottles. Mixed up bottles. We write to retract our report. Severe, oh boy, here comes some words that I might have some trouble with. Dopaminergic. Severe dopaminergic neurotoxicity. Okay, I can do it. Severe dopaminergic neurotoxicity. Alright, whatever. In primates, after a common recreational dose regimen of MDMA, in parentheses, ecstasy. Following our recent discovery that the drug used to treat all but one animal in that report came from a bottle that contained methamphetamine instead of the intended drug, MDMA. That was the quote from the retraction, which was published in the September 8th issue of Science. His lab requested a batch of methamphetamine and a batch of MDMA from a supplier on the same day. Soon after the study began, apparently one was for the study, one was for recreational use. The bottles were mislabeled. The labeling error was discovered after Ricart tried repeatedly, and this is the sick part, he tried repeatedly to duplicate the results he published in the September 2002 study. He could not achieve the same brain damage in the primates in further research. So he became suspicious that something was amiss.
You think you're invincible. I started out taking 1 to 2. I ended up taking 7 to 10.
Shut up.
Nothing goes the way that people expect it to go. You don't remember things you're doing. Your body hurts. You're just worn down. With ecstasy, it was like one day I was healthy and had an immune system, and the next day I didn't. I would wake up sometimes, like, shaking. It's physically painful. Once I hit my absolute bottom emotionally and mentally, I just wanted to die.
A message from the Partnership for a Drug-Free New York and America.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We've heard it all before. Propaganda. He went back and inspected the bottle that originally accompanied the supposed MDMA, found that it was not methamphetamine, but MDMA. Wait a minute. The bottle that accompanied the... Yeah, okay, whatever. The supposed bottle of MDMA was already empty. I wonder why. But some frozen monkey brains... I couldn't make this up. Some frozen monkey brains left over from the study remained. Yeah. Inspection of them showed evidence of methamphetamine, but no ecstasy.
Pop quiz.
Oh,
your queen is going to a party with lollipops.
You know, I don't want to hear it anymore. Go away. Funny thing is, I've never used ecstasy. I just want to go on the record as saying that. I've never done it myself. I know lots of people who have, and I'm not saying there's no danger. There's danger in anything if you do it too much. There's danger in anything to some people who might have a physical problem with certain things. And there's certainly danger in those addictive substances, which I always advise people to stay away from. Things like heroin, things like cocaine. But when you start labeling other things that aren't addictive as the same, and people find out that they're not, then they start using the other things as well, thinking that they're not harmful either. You do more harm than good. And you wind up with a lot of stupid people just following propaganda for no particular reason, other than they're told that over and over again. Anyway, continuing with the story. Ricard and Johns Hopkins pointed out that while this particular study is not valid, other studies showing the potential for different types of brain damage from MDMA use are still sound. While it is unfortunate the labeling error occurred, this in no way undermines the results of numerous previous studies performed in multiple laboratories worldwide, demonstrating the serotonin neurotoxic potential of recreational doses of MDMA in various animal species, including several primate species. But critics say this is evidence that all the guy's work should be reevaluated. Well, he does have problems reading labels. I guess that isn't that outrageous a request. Previous human studies have already shown that ecstasy did not lead to Parkinson's. This retraction, according to Rick Doblin, president of the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies in Sarasota, Florida. Why don't we have psychedelic studies here at Stony Brook, huh? Perfect place for it. The retraction shows that he's completely overzealous in trying to promote the harmful effects of MDMA. He has ignored evidence to the contrary. Even before the retraction, groups who believe his method of administration, which, by the way, is injection. Do many of you inject ecstasy? No? Oh, you got to try it. If you want brain damage, try that. Yeah, you might get it that way. Yeah, injection was not an accurate model for studying the typical MDMA dose, which is most commonly taken orally. Because ecstasy creates feelings of euphoria, warmth, and empathy, many therapists believe it could have therapeutic uses for people with post-traumatic stress disorder and other psychological problems. You know, they have no problem handing out the Prozac and the Ritalin to people. No problem at all, because there's drug companies behind that. But something like this, oh my God, what it can do to you if you take, you know, a whole bunch of it. Well, yeah, if you take a whole bunch of anything, you're going to have problems. If you use anything as a crutch, you know, as something you're so dependent on, you can't live without it, that's going to be bad. And you see that with alcohol, you see that with cigarettes, you see that with food. But the one weapon that I think we should be building, that we're not, is an educated populace. An educated populace is encouraged to learn, to experiment, to figure things out on their own, based on the evidence. And this crazy anti-drug culture that we're fostering everywhere I see it now, it's doing so much harm. And it's probably causing a lot more drug addiction than you would believe. You know, the thing that they're talking about over in Holland. Yeah, I know, everyone thinks Holland is filled with, drug addicts. There are drug addicts in Holland, no question about it. Most of them are probably from a different country that wound up going there, thinking that that's what it was all about, and now they're stuck there for whatever reason. But yeah, you know, in a fairly permissive society with drugs, you will get some drug addicts. But I dare say most people who live there are not drug addicts. And most people who live there understand something about drugs, and I'll bet most people who live there have used drugs at some point, one point or another. It's good to understand these things. But what everyone is talking about over there is this latest case, this latest case, or cases actually, where Drug Enforcement Agency agents, I guess, people, have gone over to Amsterdam and done drug deals with people in the street. Found people to sell them things like ecstasy or hash or LSD, any of those things. And then they arrest them for selling drugs to an American. Yeah, they go over to another country and somehow they have the right to arrest these people. Not only that, it gets better. They are able to extradite them to this country. So you sell drugs to an American in Holland, you get a free trip to America. How's that? How's that for a good deal? It's bizarre. I'm living in bizarre world here. So everybody in the Netherlands is up in arms about this. It's basically a form of kidnapping. And of course, most of the people plead to something because they don't want to wind up in an American prison. They plead guilty to something, they wind up in a Dutch prison. For something else. But it's just so bizarre. that someone can be arrested in their own country, brought to another country, charged under that country's laws, and their country just bends over and lets it happen. That's the most disgusting part right there, is that there's, on the government level, there is no resistance to this. People are infuriated, but the government, no problem. America, do whatever you want. It's so sad. It's so sad what's happening over there. And what's happening over here, of course. People need to be educated about this. Now, here's something interesting out of Canada, where marijuana use has been legalized to a degree for patients. But here's the interesting story. This is from today's Associated Press. Some of the first patients to smoke Canada's government-approved marijuana say it is disgusting and they want their money back. Yes, Health Canada, the federal health department, started selling marijuana in July to bring relief to patients suffering from AIDS, cancer, and other diseases. The move followed a court order that patients should not be forced to get their marijuana from drug dealers on the streets. But some of the first to buy the government's marijuana say it is no good. It's totally unsuitable for human consumption, said Jim Wakeford, an AIDS patient in Gibson's, British Columbia. Wakeford and Barry Daly, who both use marijuana to combat the nausea associated with AIDS, are returning their one-ounce bags, and Daly is demanding his money back, which is about $110 plus taxes. Wakeford is returning his unpaid bill for two bags with a written complaint. Now get this, the marijuana is being grown for Health Canada deep underground in a vacant mine section in Flin Flon, Manitoba. And yeah, it's guarded, so don't go over there. By Prairie Plant Systems on a contract worth about $4.2 million. 10 patients have registered with Health Canada to buy marijuana directly from the government to alleviate their medical symptoms. Another 39 applications are pending. But boy... I guess, you know, there's some things the government is just no good at. And growing marijuana is probably one of them. If only they had asked the right people, you know, they could get some really quality material, let's put it that way. But the fact that, you know, this is being used medicinally should tell you something. When's the last time you saw cigarettes prescribed as a way to treat any illness? Other than maybe life. That's the only thing cigarettes can cure. At least they're trying over there. At least it's a clumsy effort. It's really pathetic, but at least, you know, they're making some attempt. Now we just got to go the rest of the way and get people to not throw 65-year-old comics in prison for 9 months for selling bongs. Boy, that upsets me. If there's anything we can do to help Tommy Chong, I'd like to know what it is. Write to us, OTW, at 2600.com. Any phone calls out there, 631-632-WUSB. We have a couple of minutes left. We can go over some of the other exciting news headlines going on. Oh, this, it's all bad news, though. You know, it's all bad news. How do you like this? The Italian Prime Minister is defending Mussolini now. This guy, Berlusconi, he just keeps getting worse every week. Yeah, basically, what did he say this time? Mussolini never killed anyone. Mussolini used to send people on vacation in internal exile. Now, of course, the Italian Jewish community is a bit upset by this. The fascist regime did not make extermination camps for the Jews, but certainly it contributed to creating them. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, maybe the guy needs the guy from Canada. Maybe he needs one of Tommy's boxes to smoke better.
Yeah, you know, I would bet that Tommy would have something valuable to contribute to that discussion, and to, you know, to imprison the guy because he sold bongs is just so stupid and sad.
It's pretty outrageous, actually. But it would be maybe benefit the people in Canada if they had the lousy pot. You know, you stick it in a bong, it cools it down, and you know, you're all set. So maybe Tommy could be, you know, conducting a good public service by running his business.
Well,
really.
Sir, let me ask you something. I don't know you. I don't know where you're calling from. I have no identifying information whatsoever about you. Have you ever used a bong?
Oh, well, let me think about that. Only when I didn't inhale.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, they're works of art. Some of them, I mean, just looking at the science behind the various contraptions that people build in order to smoke marijuana, I'm impressed. These people could be scientists for NASA, probably are, but I'm simply stunned. I could never do something like that.
Well, you know, I guess I haven't seen them either, but I guess they're hand-blown glass, and I've been collecting some glassware, but not that kind of glassware, vases and the like, recently. But some of this stuff could be very beautiful and, you know, collectible. So I imagine that these things are would be somewhat collectible now, perhaps. That he's been put out of business.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a big drug user, okay? And I don't recommend that people become big drug users. I do recommend people learn for themselves and experiment with various things and not listen to idiots of either side. But, you know, what if I am interested in artwork, what if I consider these bongs to be, as you described, works of art? Is it illegal for me to collect those types of works if I never use them for anything other than to stack them in my house or something like that? Am I now guilty of some kind of drug crime?
That's a good point. There is an art gallery now displaying, I think it's a National Community College that's displaying the flag, and they're allowing people to step on the flag.
Uh-huh.
But, particularly agree with stepping on the flag. And I actually haven't smoked pot in quite a while, but I don't really have that much of a problem with it.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. I think people are feeling guilty for things that either they did or didn't do and imposing it on other people. You know, you got to let people reach these decisions on their own and just encourage them to be smart, educated on whatever it is they wind up doing.
Absolutely. And it's just surprising that they would arrest them and throw them in jail for 9 months. I mean, jail time, 9 months for selling these things. It's just as unbelievable.
Yeah. He's going to be 66 when he gets out. I don't know. That's
I have the story, though, about the step over in the Netherlands. That is mind-boggling as well, but there was probably some other kind of, international Interpol thing going on where we have some kind of treaty with them that allows... They're probably going after not the guy that's just selling a couple of joints or a small bag. They're probably going after... bigger deals. I'm only assuming that. I have no idea. It is
not
bizarre that they could be arrested.
From what I understand, these were street deals. And, you know, whenever I go to Amsterdam, yeah, everybody, you know, is trying, not everybody, but people, you walk down the street, people say, hey, do you need cocaine? Do you need this? Do you need that? No, yeah, I'm fine. But it's not a big deal. You know, you deal with it, and if you want to make a stupid decision, you do that, and you have only yourself to blame for it, not somebody else.
Yeah, but it was street dealers that they were going after.
I'm pretty sure it was from what
you know, like thousands of pills or anything like that.
From what I'm told, it was street dealers. I'll look into it some more.
It's unbelievable because isn't that stuff legal over there?
It's not legal, but it's not criminalized. It's something that they kind of like don't really prosecute that much. But the point is, it is over there. It's their country. It's their laws. They should be respected. Period.
That's right. Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
Listen, I'm out of time. Thanks so much for your call.
Here and there, you know.
All right. Thanks for your call. We're out of time, and. We'll be on again next week. Actually, one more thing I want to say before we go this week. I'm sorry to those people we didn't get to. Maybe we'll take more calls next week. Someone we lost last week, well, apart from John Ritter, who we paid a little tribute to at the beginning of the show with our Three's Company theme, we lost someone who I was really stunned by how much of an effect this guy had on so many different people. When I was a kid, I remember hearing Johnny Cash songs on the radio, you know, Boy Named Sue, all that kind of thing. And he had this distinctive voice, his distinctive look, the distinctive type of music that just sort of went along with his voice and his look. And then there was kind of this period where I didn't hear much from him. In fact, I wasn't even sure he was still alive. This was, a number of years ago. And then all of a sudden, he became cool in the eyes of people playing new music. And I just thought that was really neat that he would have this kind of renaissance and still be around, still be active and making new records and things like that. So when he passed away this past week... I was sad, along with many, many other people. And it was just amazing to me how many people were affected by this, how many tributes I saw and heard on the radio. It's the only time, I think, where you would hear a tribute to Johnny Cash on a mainstream station and a college station for completely different reasons. So someone who can touch that many people really deserves some credit, and I am sad to see him go. And I'm going to play a song that actually kind of... typifies who he was, because he stepped outside of his particular genre of music on a number of occasions, this time to record something written by Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails, of all people. You never would have expected somebody to do this. And I also have to point out that, he died at kind of an inconvenient time for me to go out and find the record, all right? I was looking for the record everywhere. I wasn't really looking that hard, but, you know, I looked locally, and it wasn't there, of course. And I couldn't spend days looking for it, and I could buy it online, but it wouldn't get here in time for the show. So, yes, I had somebody download this for me on the Internet. So if that offends you, tune away now. But you are about to hear music that was downloaded off the Internet illegally because it was the only way we could get it for the show. I promise I'll buy the damn record, okay? I was going to buy it anyway. But just in case anyone out there is listening and wants to hold me to it, fine. Rendition of Johnny Cash doing Trent Reznor's Hurt. We'll see you next week.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, the old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. Of thorns.
Didn't think he'd say it, did you?
Upon my liar's chair, full of broken thoughts, I cannot repair. Beneath the stains of time, the feelings disappear. You are someone else. I am still right here. What have I become? My sweetest friend. Everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will make you hurt. If I could start again, a million miles. I would find a way.
Hi, this is Albert Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.